You're listening to episode 22 of the Tennis Files podcast with special guest Junior Orr.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. I'm proud and honored to bring you an interview with Junior Orr, who is a player that I've known since he was around 7 years of age. I first met him at the Aspen Hill Club in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I had the pleasure of actually teaching in some of the summer camps when I was around like 17 or 18, and Junior was playing in there in those camps, and I remember him just crushing people who were 10, 20, 30 years older than him in the club when he practiced. And he, you know, from a young age, we all knew that he would be a great player. He was extremely passionate about tennis, probably one of the most passionate and dedicated players that we had seen at the club, always practicing, training. And he has taken that passion for the game and turned it into a professional career. He did a great job in the juniors, consistently being a top-ranked player. Then he went on to Texas A&M and had a great career there. And now he just recently went full-time on the professional tour, and he plays a lot of futures events currently, and he's ranked around 1,000 in the world. But we know he's going to do extremely well because of his mindset and his dedication, and you'll also get a sense of that in the interview by the way that Junior talks and, you know, thinks about the game. And you're going to learn a lot of great tips and insight, really, on what has been helping Junior to succeed and do so well. In particular, you're going to learn a huge tip on how to improve your serve, which is something I'm excited and going to implement immediately. And you're also going to learn about how he is able to separate himself from the rest of the pack, if you will, to propel him to success. And you're going to just have a great time learning his perspective on tennis in general. And I think you're going to really enjoy the interview. So without further ado, here is my interview with tennis pro Junior Orr. Hey everybody, we're here with Junior Orr, who is an amazing professional tennis player who I have had the pleasure of knowing since he was about 8 years old. Junior used to play at the same tennis club that I did, and used to teach in the summer camps where he played, and last week he was able to teach me a thing or two about how to play the game. You know, he's been grinding the USTA pro circuit for, has it been a year, Junior?
No, I mean, I just started really going at it since September, so almost about a year.
Oh, awesome. And Junior, just, you know, a fantastic player, and he was a stud at Texas A&M University. But Junior, I just want to welcome you to the Tennis Files podcast, and I really appreciate your time.
No, man, thanks for inviting me. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Oh, no worries. No worries, Junior. And so I just want to jump into your background and just ask you, how did you first get your start in tennis?
Well, my grandfather, it goes back to my grandfather. He was always into the sport. He's the one that really started me. And yeah, it was my grandfather that really put me into the sport of tennis.
Yeah, I mean, I want to give big props to your grandfather, who my father and I have talked to on a few occasions, and he was just very devoted to your tennis. And I remember him, I think he fed you, it was soybeans or maybe a soybean shake or something, but he just to make sure you had all the energy you needed.
That's funny that you actually remember that. Yeah, that's exactly what he did. He gave me soybeans every morning or every time he saw me, he always gave me a shake of soybeans.
Nice. Yeah. Well, that, I think that really helped you out.
Yeah, it did.
That's awesome. And so, you know, at what age did you kind of commit to playing tennis seriously, where you thought to yourself, like, you know, this is the sport that I want to play and pursue?
I mean, when I was 5 years old, that's when I really thought I really could do it with tennis. Wow. That's what my grandfather just put me into the sport of tennis, like since I was three. Just played in the basement. That's how I started off, and I don't know, we just really went after it. He always showed me videos of Sampras and Agassi. So I really wanted to be just like them. So ever since I was five, I was fully committed.
Wow. And do you have any idea where your grandfather's passion for tennis came from?
Yeah, I mean, it was one day in Peru. Like, he was living in Peru. He was about 25 years old. He was working at a bank. He grew up a soccer player. You know, he was really good at soccer. My dad was actually a professional soccer player, or was about to be in Peru, a professional soccer player. So he saw the sport way later in his life. You know, just people, country club members playing it, and he just really liked it. And I think he just picked it up. And that was his passion ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Junior, so what was your first tournament experience like? Like, talk about, you know, what age did you first start competing? And then, you know, like, if you have memories of that tournament.
Yeah. I always think back to it. When I was 6 years old, that's when I played my first tournament. It was an 8 and under as co-ed. And I just remember getting to the finals. And I played a kid that was obviously 2 years bigger than me and had more experiences, crushed me 8-0. So, wow. Yeah. But no, that was the first time my first tournament. I just got to the finals. It was a fun time.
Nice. And so what was your feeling after that tournament, even though, you know, you had a tough loss? Like, were you motivated, or were you kind of down after that, or what was your feeling?
I hated second place. When I looked at the trophy, I didn't like to see number two. I always wanted to see number one. So, I mean, that motivated me to get to number one. And the next thing you know, I ended up being number one. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest character traits that a successful tennis player has. You got to be competitive. So
for sure.
That really pushed you and drove you toward that. So, yeah, and as I mentioned, you know, I remember you at the Aspen Hill Club training with Jeff Klein, one of the guys that coached you. And I also remember you playing a club member. So when you were like nine, you were beating up on this guy, a very nice guy named Rich, I think. And it was just funny to see you, you know, playing a grown up guy and beating him. That was pretty cool. But I just want to, you know, obviously give a shout out to Aspen Hill. And if you could talk about like your experience training at the Aspen Hill Club.
Oh, man, there's Aspen Hill is one of the best places to be, man. I mean, I just remember Norma Baker. Yes. You know, she, mother of Marianne Baker, she treated me like I was her son. Like, I was going through a couple things when I was younger, and she just, you know, took me in as a family member. And I think that was a really big part of my success moving forward. She really embraced me as a person, really embraced me as a player. And I think because of her, I am where I am today. And obviously Jeff Klein and Tomas, you know, those guys, and all you older guys watching you guys play, you know, I mean, I remember watching you play. I was like, dang, dude, this guy's sick. Like, I remember that, you know, watching you play, watching the other guys play, like the good wins. And mm-hmm. I was like, dang, these guys are cool. I want to be like these guys.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, we're all just extremely proud of you and everything you've accomplished and continue to accomplish.
Man.
And it's just, you're sick now.
thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries. And so I'm curious about, you know, because obviously big part of the game is developing juniors and stuff. So I was wondering, you know, how many hours a week do you remember taking lessons, I guess private lessons, and then did that kind of increase or decrease as you got older?
The private lessons, I think it's pretty much the same, you know, 1 or 2 hours maybe, you know, with the coach. I mean, I don't really believe that you need that much time alone with the coach. I just believe that maybe once every couple of days and just work on the stuff in the clinics with the other big guys, you know, just working your stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, the coach is going to be there at the clinics as well, you know, so you're still getting watched over. I don't know. I just Every couple days, I think, or maybe even sometimes every day, but maybe just like once, like 1 hour, you know?
Yeah, no, I got you. Yeah, that sounds perfectly reasonable. Yeah. And so I know you did eventually transition to the Junior Tennis Champion Center, which is obviously one of the top facilities for juniors to train at. And so what age did you start training at JTCC?
I started switching over when they first opened, when it was 1999, I think.
Wow.
So how old was I? I don't know. I was like 7, 8. Oh. I was like, yeah, like eight or nine, somewhere around there. And I just remember I was hitting with, like, you know, guys like Billy Mertz.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I hit with them for the first time when I was there, and I was like, dang, hi, this guy's got a massive forehand. I really got to pick it up.
Yeah, and no, you bring up a great point about how it's great to surround yourself with great players and older players, because then you see kind of what you have to improve in your game to get to that next level. So
for sure, yeah.
Fantastic. And, you know, I'm familiar with a couple coaches at JTCC. I always like to tell people how, you know, Vesapunko would never let me drink a glass of water, and he'd always, like, tell me feet moving, and I felt like I was going to get a heart attack. But that was one lesson. But, for sure. I'm curious, like, kind of who coached you over there at JTCC?
First, when JTCC first opened, rest in peace. Do you remember Jason?
I do, yeah. Jason, was it Rainier, I think?
Yeah, yeah. He was my coach until he passed away. Then I went to his good friend, Frank Salazar, who obviously worked with Kudla as well. So that's who coached me at my time at College Park.
Yeah, no, those are definitely great coaches. Yeah, I think Frank was a previous junior number one, I believe.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. But so, when did you first start getting ranked kind of at the top of your age division? Was it like pretty much like from the eights on, or like when was that?
Well, I was always like pretty high in the rankings of like my age groups, like starting with the state, you know. I used to play like those little satellites from, like, you know, was it Sal de Oliva? Or...
Yes, yes. I just saw him the other day. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember playing his tournaments, and I would always end up being number one, you know, and those guys were like 2 years older than me. So then I switched over playing Mid-Atlantics and I ended up being number one there. And then I started playing nationals. So, I mean, the highest ranking I was nationally on 12s was 5. Mm. And then once I hit 5 in the nation when I was 12, that's when I knew that I could really do something pretty fun with the sport, you know?
Yeah, no. And did you ever have a two-handed backhand, or did you always have the one-hander?
No, I switched over to the one-hander when I was 13. I had a two-hander before. I remember I used to fool around with it at Aspen Hill because I saw Goodwin hit it, Michael Goodwin.
Right.
And I was like, dang, maybe I could do the same thing too. You know? So then I tried to show off a little bit. And Tomas at the time was like, all right, try it out. So I tried out. But I switched over after this 12 Super Nationals, this last one I played. I beat Bjorn Fantangelo for fifth and sixth place. And I showed off to Martin Blackman, and I went back to College Park. I had Frank, Vesa, Martin, Oliver Ali. I had all those guys check me out, and I switched when I was 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's obviously really tough for juniors, you know, so you're developing physically and mentally, you know, to deal with some of the pressures and, you know, staying at the top. So I'm wondering, if you can remember, what was one of the biggest obstacles you faced as a junior player, and how were you able to overcome that obstacle?
Well, the biggest one for me in the juniors was switching to a one-hander. Because at the time, my two-hander was my best shot. Like, I could do a lot of things with my two-handed backhand. Obviously, I was able to use my right hand, and I was a little bit weaker. So the transition of switching to a one-hander really affected me that whole year. Because I was losing to guys I never lost to.
Right.
Like, I had to develop other weapons to avoid, you know, trying to hit over the backhand. And I had to use more, like, different shots, like the slice backhand. I had to use a backhand volley, you know, instead of just, you know, ripping backhands wherever. But I think that was the toughest part of my junior career, was switching to a one-hander.
And what kept you on that path? Because, you know, sometimes if you're losing to people who you used to beat, then you might question yourself in that choice.
Well, it was actually the supporting coaches, the supporting staff around me. Frank Salazar was always on it. I always kept saying, "No, that's it. I'm done. I'm gonna switch back." And Bessa was like, "Over my dead body, you're gonna switch back. You're gonna stick to that one hander." So I mean, I gutted it out, and thank God I gutted it out, because I don't know if it's right to say, but I feel like I was a little bit more marketable when I stayed with the one-hander. And a year later, the tournament that I lost first round at, I actually ended up winning the 14 Super Nationals in Austin, Texas. And I actually ended up getting an Adidas sponsorship right off the bat right there.
Wow. It's pretty sick, man.
That was pretty, I got lucky there.
You know, if you would have got Under Armour, you could have got the new Chef Curry shoes. Those are pretty nice.
Yeah, no, those things are pretty popping right now. Dang, man. I wish I could go back and go to Under Armour.
Oh, no, it's all right. It's solid. Right. Yeah. But Junior, it's hilarious. But what is your fondest match or tournament experience as a junior? What was it?
I have two moments that were pretty profound for me. It was a time where I just switched, like I said, and a year later, I won the 14 Super Nationals in Austin, Texas.
Right.
And able to switch and able to get Adidas. And then later on in my career, the French Open. When I played Junior French Open, I never look at the draws. I was just happy to be there. You know, just, oh, dang, I'm in my favorite Grand Slam of my life when I'm here. And it was sick, you know. I ended up playing the number one player in the world at the time. He won French Open Juniors the year before. So I'm playing the defending champ first round, and I'm just like, oh, dang, you know. But I actually came out and I won, and I actually got the attention of a lot of guys at the time. Like, I don't, like, it was kind of weird, because I would be walking after I won the match. There was like 300 people surrounding me, like asking for autographs. There's a lady that came up to me saying, "Oh, come to the newsroom. We're going to interview you." Then next thing I know, I see Annie Murray just eyeing me down. Wow. Tursunov, you know, they were talking, they were just looking at me, and I was just like, whoa. And I actually got the attention of Uncle Tony. So like, I caught a lot of eyes at the French Open. That was actually pretty, that was a pretty awesome moment in my life.
Yeah, no, congrats on that. It's pretty cool. And you know, Uncle Tony must have been kind of worried, you know, another lefty doing well on the French, in the French. So yeah, it's pretty sick. But yeah, and you know, the other day I was actually talking with Tim Hahn, who's a owner of Sports World, and you know, son's a good player. And you know, I mentioned him how, like, you basically like served everyone off the court, including myself. Obviously, you have an amazing serve.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, sure, it's huge. And he did mention that you kind of change it up a bit. I'm not sure if it's either the toss or just hitting it at the apex. But when did you do that? Was that like right before college?
Well, let's just say after the U.S. Open Juniors, because I wasn't winning the Grand Slams, I felt like I needed a drastic change. I felt like just grinding, you know, spinning the ball around, playing mostly defense wasn't going to work for me. So I felt like I needed a new approach. So I went down to this guy down in Tampa. His name is Steve Smith. He's the father of Connor Smith that went to Ohio State. And this guy, he gave me a lot of parenting. He said, well, the way you hit the ball, you're going to need to work at a Safeway or a Giant. Like, yeah. And I was at the time, I was top 20 in the world, you know? So it was kind of shocking to hear that.
I mean, they have good benefits, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when I heard that, I was like, okay, so this guy must see something. So he's the guy that really changed my serve motion, my approach to the tennis game, my strokes, my volleys, everything. Just, and he made me more analytical to how to play the game, and especially the serve motion. So it all started with that guy. So all thanks to him for the serve, really. And then Steve Denton, obviously, you know, worked on it as well during college. And then the guy I'm working with right now, Chip Hooper and Pablo Raya, they were both top 30 ATP. Those are the guys I'm working with, and we're just still working on the serve.
Wow. If you could possibly, I know you don't want to give away all your secrets, but like maybe one big concept about the serve that has helped you a lot to, you know, make it as good as it is today that you could share with the audience, perhaps?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, thanks. The way I got my serve, so I used to serve at like my first serve would be at what, at 109, 105, mm-hmm. just kicks or whatever. Then 3 months later, I'm hitting 125, 130. Mm-hmm. It's not really a secret. What I basically did was I would get like a long, you know, a regular tennis sock, not an ankle sock, but like a long sock, and I'd stuff a tennis ball in there. Mm-hmm. And I literally, Steve Smith would put me in front of a mirror, or even before I go to sleep, and he would work on my serve. I would have to work on my serve motion with the ball in the sock. So mm-hmm. if the ball ever hit me at any point, and if the ball is not moving constantly, like with rhythm, then my serve was off. Like the rhythm is bad. So I basically just had to work on my rhythm on the serve with the sock. And if it ever hit my back, then it was wrong. If it hit me in the head, it was wrong. If it hit me, you know, anywhere. So it just had to be one fluid motion and just being loose. And that's what changed my serve, was the sock and the ball.
Wow. Wow. No, that we really appreciate that. You probably help a lot of people out with that tip. So, I mean, you basically just like would use a sock and ball, and, you know, and just practice the motion. Then you would just go out on the court with your racket and then just do the same thing, right? And help your rhythm out.
Yeah, I had to do that for like at least an hour a day.
Wow.
If not more.
Wow. Well, I know what I'm going to be doing after this interview. Because, you know, I mean, just the serve is just, I mean, we all know this, but it's the most important stroke. I mean, you're serving half the time, and I mean, you can have a lot of free, easy points that way. And I mean, it's just so huge. That's amazing. So Junior, I'm curious too. Obviously you had a lot of success in the juniors. You beat the world number one at the French, incredible. So did you ever think about going pro instead of, to college?
Yeah. I mean, my whole time I was a junior, I never thought of college. I actually always thought of going pro. People around me, you know, would tell me pro. There wasn't any doubt in my mind I was going to go pro. Like, I always thought that. Hmm. So, I mean, me going to college was pretty much last second.
Right. But sorry to interrupt. Yeah, but in the end, so what made you decide to go to college, to Texas A&M versus turning pro?
Well, at the time, when I told you, like, I was changing up my game style, mm-hmm. The coach I worked with before, Steve Smith, he said, oh, why don't you go to college and work on the things rather than lose on the tour and, you know, constantly have to pay, you know, why not take the scholarship and work on the things that I need to rather than, you know, because I was getting offered, like, you know, Octagon at the time was offering me, like, the agency company.
Right.
They're offering me to, like, go sign pro with them. You know, they would pay for the expenses and stuff. But without a doubt, that was probably the best decision I ever made, was going to college and working on the things that I need to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you made a great decision. You know, you get the education to fall back on in the future. And then, I mean, there's been a lot of great players who – went to college, obviously. I mean, the most obvious one right now, I guess, is John Isner, and then Somdev is, you know, done pretty well. And then obviously our friend Tread Huey from our section, he's doing great in doubles. And then Johnson, yeah, that's right, Steve Johnson. So yeah, that's fantastic. And so can you describe kind of what your first year was like playing for Texas A&M?
Well, let's just say that was a first off, Texas A&M is completely different from our area. It was a complete culture shock. Hmm. I had everyone coming up to me saying howdy. Everyone being really nice. It was really country.
Nice.
You know, I mean, Southern hospitality, everyone's really nice. And, you know, people up here in, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, they can be very, I don't know, hard, harsh. Mm-hmm. You know, so everyone being so nice around there, it was really new, so I kind of was like, hey, back away.
what do you want?
I got freaked out.
Yeah.
No, but it was great. You know, I had great teammates. I played with, you know, Austin Krycek.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Yeah, he was on the team. I played with Jeff DeDamo, Alexis Clegu. I played with a lot of great guys on the team. My first year was awesome. When we played against Texas, the Longhorns, mm-hmm. my first year, I remember – I had a clinch for the doubles point. We had this amazing point, and we won the doubles. there was like about 1,000 fans coming out to watch, and it was so rowdy. It was one of the greatest feelings that I ever experienced as well, like in college. I grew up with a big group of guys that really pushed me to go forward. Even like Krychek, he was always on me, always. I guess I don't know. He was a really nice guy, but my first year was a big change.
Yeah, and I imagine from the juniors, and now it's a team game again, and you're with like upperclassmen and stuff. But no, that's awesome. And I'm curious to know, what parts of your game you think improved the most as a result of playing college tennis?
Doubles. Mm-hmm. Doubles has definitely improved dramatically. My volleys, and obviously my serve. So, coming forward, for me, it was more offense in college. My offensive game improved dramatically. I always loved coming forward when I was in college, and I think the maturity of like knowing where to go, when to go, instead of just like junior tennis, is kind of rolling the ball over, So
right. Mm-hmm. And I know you just mentioned that big match against Texas. But what's maybe your fondest memory overall from your college tennis days?
It was actually my junior year. We just switched to the SEC from the Big 12. Mm-hmm. And we always, played the Longhorns. We always had like home and away matches with them in the Big 12. We weren't supposed to play the Longhorns at all, because we never scheduled with it because they were kind of sour that we left the Big 12. I mean, truthfully.
Right.
But we played them in the NCAA second round. We were the 11 seed, the 10 seeds or something. We ended up playing Texas second round. So Coach Steve Denton comes up to me after we won the doubles point. We won it pretty handily. He says to me, "You're going to be the hero of the match. You're going to clinch this match for us." Mm-hmm. And I'm looking over at a couple matches. Our guy number six won his first set 6-0 in like 5 minutes. The other guys are looking good. And I was like, no. We're going to win easy, coach. What are you talking about? And this is, let me tell you, I had the flu for a week already. So I didn't play tennis for the week before. And I was just feeling awful. I didn't play much. Like I didn't think I was going to win my match. I had a tough match. So next thing you know, it's 3-3 and it comes down to my match. And I'm having a full body cramp already by the end of the second set. I lose the first set easily, and I won the second set 7-6. 8-6 in the breaker or something crazy.
Wow.
I'm cramping up. My fingers cramping, my toes, my back, my hammies, my thighs. I'm basically having a full body cramp. And I just remember that I ended up pulling it out, even with everything that I was facing, like all the adversity. Like I had the whole crowd there watching, and obviously people watching online, like my old teammates. And I know the other sports were watching as well, like football, soccer, all those other sports. And I just remember, I almost got broken every single game in the third set. It always became do sad, but I ended up clinching and I ended up winning. And that was the best feeling I ever had in my life.
Wow. That's awesome. And, is this the video that's on YouTube by any chance?
Yeah, that's the same video.
Nice. You pull them wide. And on the ad side, then you hit a cross-court forehand winner. It's pretty sick.
Yeah,
I'm glad that that's online. You can always refer to that and just remember.
No, for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so, Junior, our audience always loves learning about drills and obviously other like information to help their game. But I'm curious if you can remember maybe one or two of your favorite drills that you and your teammates did in college, and to just like, briefly describe them.
In college, it always used to do with the serve. It was a serve in the first ball, then the first volley.
Hmm.
So we would just pick a spot on the serve, hit it wherever we felt most comfortable hitting. First ball, we usually go down the line. We come in and hit the next volley to the open court. And then it was usually just drills with the serves and ending with a volley. Those are the drills that I liked the most, was, trying to really dictate the point and give the guy no rhythm. And that was a big thing with our team.
Excellent. And so Now kind of shifting to the, you know, the pro game, just kind of take us through like kind of, you know, the initial impression and like experience from transitioning to, you know, to the pro game and, you know, how maybe difficult it was for you or, you know, easy.
No, I remember my first couple tournaments playing the pros. Let's just say that the approach, you know, how college tennis can be really intense. You know, guys screaming constantly every point,
right,
just to get in the guy's face. Well, none of that garbage works in the pro game. The pro game is about being more composed. It's about being more. It's more just you. Like in the pro game, especially like in the lower levels, like the futures and the challengers, there's not many people watching you. You know, it's not, you're not going to have that supportive teammates or the supportive people around you that you had in college. Like you may have one person watching if you're lucky, or that's like your family member, or your girlfriend usually, you know?
Right.
So transitioning over that, it's like a big like eye opener. Like, wow, this is the real life. This is the reality of the tennis game. And you know, that stuff that college players bring, you know, good constant, come on. It doesn't faze the other guys, you know? So, I mean, the big change for me was learning to pick and choose when to, you know, celebrate my points. You know, not letting the outside affect me. Like, shoot, like, where's my supportive cast? Like, no, it's me on the court. It's me by myself. Mm-hmm. How it's always been on the court, and it's about me, you know. So it's really about. That's what I learned mostly. Like switching over, and being professional as opposed to like in college, you could kind of get away with it, you know, just like with eating habits, you know, just kind of like hanging out with your teammates or not stretching enough.
Mm-hmm.
You really gotta, you like those small things really matter in the pros. Like how much you stretch, how much water you drank a night. Are you rolling hard? Like what time are you going to bed? Like, you know, I don't have to worry about an exam the next day, like stuff like that. And I think that was a big change for me.
That's really a fantastic analysis of the difference. And, clearly, you know, I'm not near your level at all, but I did play the qualies of an ITF Futures in Charlottesville a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I was amazed, you know, more so than you would be, just because you're a better player, but just like at the, you know, professionalism of the players and like how incredibly good they all are to me. And just really a whole different level. And you have to be so dedicated in order to reach the top. I mean, there's so many people that you have to just really believe in yourself and train as hard as you can and be disciplined, like you mentioned, to have a shot at it. But I'm curious too, you know, there's obviously futures and challengers all over the world, as with the other tournaments on the pro tour, but how do you kind of pick and choose which ones you're going to play?
Well, to be honest, I don't really pick and choose. Like I think everyone would know this around the world, that playing in the US is one of the toughest places to play.
Yeah.
Because you got pros coming back from injury, you know, that are in the area. Everyone moves to the US to train in the US and to live in the US, like foreigners. So, I mean, I remember I played Peter Polansky a couple of weeks ago or like a couple months ago, and he, you know, was always on TV playing ATP events against Nadal and Federer. Like I saw, like he played Verdasco like a month before I played him. Wow. And he's just getting back from injury, you know? So, I mean, I like to play the tougher matches because I feel like I get more enjoyment out of it. I like to, like, even if I lose or if I win, regardless, I love the competition. And I feel like eventually you're going to have to play the tougher players and you're going to have to beat them. So traveling to like random places like Egypt or somewhere in Africa, like Nigeria or something like that, or, you know, like Asia, like Japan, like I really don't believe that it's necessary to go that far just to chase points. Cause I mean, there's a lot of guys that are chasing points out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just believe that if you got the stuff, you got the stuff. And if you don't, then, you know, you're going to have to pick a different path. And that's just what I believe in.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a fantastic approach because your aim is to be to get to the top, and at some point you're going to have to play, you know, really good players and beat them. So why not just play them now, and you know, instead of just like try to rack up. I don't want to say phantom points, but you know, it's just different. You know, when you
it basically is, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, personally, I'm planning a trip to Zimbabwe to play a few so I can get a point, but
that's completely okay, man. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah,
get some points, man. Come on, get on the board now.
I know. You know, it's different for me, but no, that's awesome. And you know, I do want to ask you too. I know it hasn't been too long for you on the Futures Tour, I guess, at least after college, but it's really hard to survive financially. And I guess if I may, I'm just curious, like how either you or maybe like people in general, like how do they survive when like usually you're making like a few $100 and you've got to pay like twice that amount for the travel and stuff? Like, how does that even work?
Well, the benefits of being of a college athlete is after college, you know, you got diehard school fans that want to help you out.
Awesome.
So, I mean, those guys, they usually help out, you know, after you're done with college, and they offer it, you know. But in my situation, I'm actually in the transition of switching over to play for Peru.
Wow.
For that sake. So I in Peru. For me, like there's gonna be more funding, you know. I'm probably gonna be one of the top guys there, and they're gonna fund me as much as I can, because my coach right now, Pablo Araya, is actually the Davis Cup captain of Peru.
Nice.
So I mean, that's I already have a huge advantage there. So he's helping me out, you know, with everything down there in Peru, and you know, like Trent Huey, I mean, switching over to the Philippines.
Right.
That was a huge move for him. Mm-hmm. And I know a couple other guys that are doing that as well. Cause you know, the US, shoot, you know how tough that is with all the, with all the top guys, you know, all Americans from college and the top juniors and all the ex pros coming back, you know, and then the top dogs, obviously. But like, you know, like the other countries, you know, they're looking for guys like that. And I believe, you know, I'm lucky enough that Peru, you know, I have Peruvian descendant, like Peruvian blood, and
right.
I'm choosing that route.
Right. No, I think that's a great, great choice. And you mentioned your grandfather is in Peru right now, right?
Yes, he is.
Awesome. That's cool. So my next question for you is, I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, obviously it's been a debate for a while, but do you, I know like that the tour has been, it has increased the prize pools and stuff like that. But like in your view, do you think the prize pools for like the futures at least are sufficient, and are they doing like, is it just a ground to weed out players, or do you think that the futures tournament should pay out like more where it's a little more livable for the players?
Well, the thing is they're doing better with it now,
right.
But it's not where it can be, you know, it's if you're not winning the tournaments, you're not breaking even.
Right.
You know, you're not paying for the prize money that you're getting from these tournaments. You're not paying for the gas. You're not paying for the hotel. You know, that's why the sponsors come in. Cause in the beginning, it's more so just about points. It's not really about the money. You know, it's just really tough. I think they could do a better job with it, and I think they will. So right now, I mean, it's easy to say that. I mean, the money in the lower tournaments, it can be increased just like every other sport.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right. No, agreed. Agreed with that. Now, so another, type of experience type question for you is, let's go back to when you got your first ATP point. Can you describe which tournament that was and, you know, how the match went, and, you know, briefly, and then, like, how you felt afterwards? I think you were younger, too, right? Is that before college?
Yeah, I was, like, 17 or 18. I remember I played I don't know if you know his name. His name is Tennis Sangren.
Yeah, I've heard of him a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, well, at the time, he was top 10 in the World Juniors, and he already had a couple points. And right now, he's about like 200, or he's about like 200 ATP, 250. I actually qualified, and I saw that I had to play him first round, and he was a wild card. And I was like, wow, I already got a tough match, because this guy beat me already before. But it was on my favorite surface. It was on clay. So I feel like I had a pretty good shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember going out there, and I was the underdog. I didn't have the pressure. He had all the pressure. And I just came out. He blasted me away in the first set, 6-2. Then I come back and win 6-1, 6-2.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's just, for me, it was the ability to manage the pressure, the ability to block out all the negativity. You know, it's just for me to say, hey, relax. It's just another match. You played him before. You know you got it. And then once I did that, like once I took a deep breath, that completely changed everything. And then he started freaking out because he hated the way I played. He was like, I hate lefties. And I loved it. I ate it up. So after I heard that, I knew I was going to win. And it was a huge win.
Yeah, no, that's a huge one. Yeah, like you just said. And so you talked about managing the pressure and things like that. And I am curious as well as, you know, obviously that's tougher than it sounds. And do you do anything to train that? Like, for example, do you meditate, or like, do you like do any sorts of like mental exercises with your coaches or like anything like that? Or is it just from playing? Yeah.
No, it's something from playing, but I'm still in the process of learning how to manage managing the pressure a lot better. I actually, my coach always, Pablo, always tells me just to breathe, just take a deep breath. You know, that's because it's like when I take short breaths, it's all nerves. And then when I take a deep breath and slow everything down, it actually works for me. So for me, it's taking a deep breath, just looking around, you know, looking around like what's real, you know, like, oh, like look at the trees, like where am I, what am I doing for a living? Instead of like working a 9-to-5 job, I'm playing tennis, you know, and that all helps out. Like it just, for me, it comes down to the breathing, and then it just relaxes my muscles and I'm able to play from there.
That's fantastic. Well, everyone in the audience, you know, take note of what Junior just said about breathing, and try the same technique when you're dealing with tough times. And I'm sure that'll, you know, help your game, help you relax and focus on the process instead of, you know, the results, which will, you know, get you hung up a lot of times.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so currently, Junior, do you train in Miami?
Yes, I train in Key Biscayne.
Okay. Oh, okay. Perfect. And so, like, do you train at like a particular academy?
Yeah, I actually train at Pablo Reyes Academy in Creighton Park.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so, are there some other like ATP WTA pros that you train with?
I actually play with some guys, you know, like we're starting up, guys that are just finished college that are playing on the tour now. I'm hooking up with players like that in the area, and like Davis Cup players from like other countries like Ecuador.
Nice.
Like other places, Bolivia, like Peru. Like those are the kind of players that I'm hitting with now, like upcoming guys from college.
That sounds like a great environment. And another thing that our audience loves to hear about is like typical like day of practice. So I'm just wondering if you could maybe just go through that a bit, like say, you know, just a normal day of how many hours you hit and how many hours you like work on agility, for example, weights and stretching and stuff.
Well, stretching is pretty important. I've been doing more stretching. I mean, I think that's like the main key to everything, because if you're not stretching, then you're going to get an injury. I mean, that's a big thing. The main focus that I've been doing in my everyday is constantly getting criticized by my coaches. Because of my game style, it's, you know, I'm working on like certain things that, you know, I believe that guys are not doing enough anymore in these days. Like coming forward, you know, with a slice, you know, finishing at the net, the ability to serve and volley, like you don't see that as much, or a chip and charge off the return. I've been working on more precision and perfection with my footwork and the using my body for rotation to get the maximum hit off my body.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Like biomechanical efficiency, basically.
Yes. Right. Yes, that's exactly it.
Right.
And if I constantly, it's step by step, like with, I've been working with Chip Hooper and Pablo Araya, like I said, and it's been pretty tough. I go all day, literally. I start at 8 a.m. I finish at like 4 p.m.
Wow.
Working on the specifics, working on, is this the right footwork? Am I taking the right step? So it's literally like playing piano. Like you do like the first three notes right, then you work on the fourth note, then you go to the fifth note, and then you start all over again. And if you mess up on the first note, you have to start over. Mm. So it's basically, you know, getting every step right before going to the next one. So, and if I get that right, I have to start over again. So it's basically just constant repetition of perfection,
mm-hmm.
of what I need to do in order to work on my game that I know that will get me to the next level. And man, it's tough. It's mentally tough, mentally tiring, but the results show.
Definitely. No, I really appreciate that insight. And I mean, that's how to do it, man. You know, you keep repeating until it becomes second nature, and then you're going to have amazing results. And so as well, I'm curious about your and your coaching staff, like Coach Araya's philosophy on weights. Like, do you use weights much, or is it like mostly body weight exercises, if you do any of that? Or,
well, to be honest, we don't really believe in, like, he doesn't really believe in heavy weights.
Right.
He believes in agility and flexibility. It's more so we mostly do body weight. So it's body weight stuff. Yeah. Bands and just stretching, constant stretching. Like, I can't say it enough. I don't feel like that I need to gain another 20 pounds to get more power in the ball.
Right.
I'll just become slower.
Exactly.
I just believe in, I need to be as flexible as I can to get the maximum of my body's abilities to do what I can with the ball.
No, I mean, I really have to thank you for emphasizing stretching. You know, I had Alistair McCaw, who worked with Kevin Anderson, and he just mentioned that how important stretching is, and that he thinks that stretching was the biggest reason for Djokovic, you know, rise to number one. It's just because he's so flexible and, you know, balanced so well on his shots. And, you know, again, he just said stretching is huge. And especially, I mean, you're not at this stage yet, but as you get older and stuff, like for the rest, yeah, of our audience, like, you got to keep stretching, or you're going to be on the physio table at some point.
No, for sure. It's the guy, like you said, Djokovic, you never see the guy on balance. You always see him, he's out full stretched, but he's balanced, you know, hitting a winner from a full split, but it's balanced.
Yeah.
You know, you can't emphasize it enough. It's stretching is the major key that a lot of people are fading away from, I believe. And they just think it's heavy weights.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's awesome. And so you stretch with bands most of the time?
No, I stretch with, I kind of do yoga stretching.
Hmm.
Yoga stretching is, I think it's really beneficial. And I've been doing a lot of that because it actually works out the little muscles a lot more. And it's tiring, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it's just, it's tough.
No, I don't doubt that, man. It's not easy. And so one thing I noticed, in addition to you just being like amazingly nice and an awesome guy, when we played, is oh, no worries, is that You know, you served in volleyed, and you mentioned that as like something that a lot of people aren't doing on the tour and stuff that can be very effective. But I just wanted to make sure, like, do you normally serve in volley in at least on the pro circuit, or is that kind of something you're working on at that tournament, or was it, you know, do you do it all the time?
No, I serve in volley. I always mix it up, but I always try to put that into my game. I just feel like it keeps my opponent off balance.
Yeah.
It keeps him guessing. Like, oh, what is he going to do next? Is he going to come in after the serve, or is he going to stay back, or can I hit it high, or do I dip it low? It just keeps him guessing. And, you know, it's just like in today's game, you don't really see that. Like, you just see even the big servers, you just see them hitting big, and then they stay back and they got an easy ball that could have been finished off with a volley, but they have an extra 5 shots that they have to hit before the point's over, you know?
Exactly. No, I think that's great you pointed out. I mean, because you just finish the point so much quicker, and you'll have a lot more energy to, you know, for the match if because you're like maximum efficiency, basically.
Exactly.
And I mean, with a serve as huge as yours, why not? you know, so. But, yeah, Junior, so, like, you know, obviously you have huge goals that I'm sure you're going to reach with your talent and hard work. But, like, moving forward at this stage in your career, like, can you kind of talk about what you think you need to do to reach the next level?
Yeah, there's a lot of things, really. The major thing, like I've been saying, is stretching. Stretching, I can't do enough of. Dieting is actually really important, and I've actually been doing a lot better with dieting. I remember leaving A&M, after I was playing, I gained like another like 20 pounds. I was like 180, so I kind of had a gut. And luckily my girlfriend, she works with me with that, with dieting and stretching and all that stuff. Nice. I lost 20 pounds because I had a gut.
Damn.
You know, I was kind of out of shape. I was kind of slow. And ever since then, like I've been eating as healthy as the healthiest I ever ate in my life. I've been eating organic stuff. Like I've been going to Whole Foods a whole bunch.
Mm.
And man, let me tell you, that stuff is gold. You know, so I mean, for me, working on my strengths, like for example, my serve and the ability to finish in the net, using my speed, and working on the forehand, you know, working on the returns, working on the slice. Like it's just, there's a lot of things I really need to work on, but for me particularly, it's the mentality of believing I could be up there with the top guys.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it all starts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that plays a huge role, and those are going to help me get me to my goals, really.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. And just a quick thing on the diet. I'm curious, like, is there any particular diet you're on or anything, or like, is there like are you maybe like not eating certain foods or anything like that, or is it just
actually,
like a clean thing?
It's funny you say that. My girlfriend actually really helps me out with that. She gives me the blood type diet.
Oh.
So my blood type's O negative. Yeah, we get really specific. So I'm O negative, so I eat what works for me. Like for example, French fries works better than bread for my sake.
Hmm.
You know, so it's really weird, but it works. Like I feel more energy. Like I've been feeling faster, stronger ever since I've been on this diet, and we've just been proceeding with the blood type diet ever since.
Wow. Now that's really interesting. And I don't know if I've really heard of the blood type diet, maybe like once or twice before, but I'm definitely going to check that out. Cause I mean, everyone is different and this diet makes sense to, you know, further put that point in perspective that, you know, certain foods work for certain people and stuff. And, yeah, I mean, I myself, like actually like a few days before I played you, I was feeling really slow and sluggish. So I also kind of did the same where I made a huge commitment to my diet. And yeah, for me, like, I mean, it's not for everybody, but I actually am experimenting with not eating meat for a little while and just seeing how that helps my fitness and stuff. And, you know, it's not for everyone, but it's good to hear you commit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And also just... curious in general for our audience, our players, I guess, like all levels, but like what advice would you give our audience on how they can improve their tennis game?
This is how I always approach it. You got to aim for the stars. No, wait, hold on. Let me rephrase that. Aim for the stars and you'll hit the moon.
Right.
Basically meaning you have goals that you always set for your life, but you have to always aim higher. You can't always, you know, if your mind is set in college, just making it to a college on the tennis team, it's like, okay, make the tennis team. But why don't you go higher? Why can't I be an All-American in singles, in doubles, and eventually be number one for the team? Just goals like that, I feel like, you know, just that keeps pushing you to improve constantly. And I feel like, I don't know, I always approached it that way. Just always trying to excel, you know, my achievements. And I feel like I've done the same. For example, for me, I wanted to be a 4-year All-American. Well, I was a 2-year All-American. And I wanted to be number one eventually, like all 4 years. Well, I was number one at least one of the four years, you know. So I feel like if you have goals like that, you know, and just trying to excel over them and passing them, I just feel like the sky's the limit for anybody, you know, because anybody can do it. It just determines on how you approach it.
Oh, that's beautifully put, Junior. I really appreciate that advice. You know, the first step is goal setting, and the higher you set it, then the higher you'll reach. So it's amazing. So Junior, you know, obviously you're playing the tour and you're going to be playing a ton of tournaments and stuff. What's the next tournament for you?
I'm actually going to go down to Peru and play one of the Peruvian tournaments down there. Try to get, you know, get my name recognized down over there in South America. After that, I'm going to go play some 25Ks in Illinois.
Nice.
Yeah, possibly play a money tournament in Richmond, Virginia right before that. And I'm just trying to get ready for the U.S. Open Nationals to get into the U.S. Open. So I'm just going to be – I mean, all basically what my schedule is like, it's just get ready for the U.S. Open Nationals to get into the U.S. Open.
Sweet. That's awesome. So where can our audience find you online or social media or whatnot if they want to follow you?
Just follow me on Facebook or Instagram, Junior Orr. It's pretty broad. It's pretty out there. It's easy to find me. Let's just say that.
Cool. Awesome. Well, anything else you want to talk about on the show?
I think I gave everything. I don't know if you have any more questions, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I guess I don't want to take your time, but I mean, you just touched upon so much amazing information. I guess maybe, okay, one last question is, moving forward, how serious do you think, or how much time do you think you're going to devote to doubles? Because you have a great game for doubles, but I'm wondering if you think you're going to kind of just see how it goes and play some doubles and go from there. Or are you just kind of more focused on singles?
No, I'm actually focused on both. My game style, it works a lot for doubles. And I actually had my biggest win in doubles. Actually, I beat this guy that won Wimbledon. He beat the Bryden brothers in the finals.
Jesus.
And his doubles partner was top 100 top 100 ATP. So, I mean, moving forward with doubles, I believe that I have the ability to be there right now. With singles, it's going to take some time. But I believe that I'll make it in both just as well. So, yeah. I mean, moving forward, I feel pretty confident in my singles and doubles ability.
Yeah, you've got the game for it. Man, if you and Trent could play one match together at least. I mean, that would be really cool because you're both lefties and stuff.
No, I've talked to, you know, OG, right?
Othman, I had him on the podcast actually a little while ago.
Yeah. No, I just talked to him, you know, a couple of days ago, and I've been talking to Farshad. I got to catch up first before I could get there, but I don't think they, you know, I got to prove myself at that level. But I like to beat Trent first before I play with him. So hopefully he's still around when I come up there, and you know, obviously he's got a heck of a serve and great hands at the net, and he's got a hell of a doubles partner too, Max Mirny. So you know, so no, I'd love to get the chance to play with him one day, you know, eventually, and represent like our Mid-Atlantic. It'd be pretty sick.
Yeah, man, I'll make some signs and like cheer like crazy for that one. But yeah, no, now that you asked me for questions, I think I got two more for you, if you don't mind.
No, of course, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks so much. So one is, I'm curious if you've read tennis books, and if so, like which couple would you recommend or as being most influential to your game?
Tennis books, the Billie Jean King book. I'd say, was it What the Privilege? Yeah, I feel like that's a good one, because I actually didn't read the whole thing. I read a bit of it, and I actually really liked what she had to say about tennis being a privilege. And then obviously the Agassi book. I mean, Agassi's book, it shows a guy that was in a struggle, and then he just overcomes his own inner struggles. And I don't know, I feel like everyone has like their own negativity in their heads, and it kind of just shows on like how to overcome it with what the Agassi book. And I don't know, I always found that like pretty cool, because you don't see a lot of badasses like that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just sick, because he said he didn't even like tennis and he still accomplished all that. I mean, I don't
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like I said, he's a pretty badass dude. Heck of a guy.
So a lot of people have trouble with discipline. You know, they have the goals, they have dreams and stuff, but at the end of the day, things distract them, or they can't commit themselves enough. So where would you say the discipline comes from for you? How are you able to keep focused and train it at such a high level for a long period of time?
Well, it just comes down to the question, how bad do you want it? Mm-hmm. You know, how bad are you willing to make the sacrifice? Are you willing to make this your job? You know, or do you want to just give up and just work a 9-to-5 job? You know, it just depends on the person. It's just their willingness to sacrifice, their willingness to give up, you know, hanging out with friends, with the willingness to, you know, the having to stay away from home, family, you know, all the sort of things. It just really comes down to how bad you want it. You know, it's like, you know how Conor McGregor says it's an obsession.
Mm-hmm.
I think he really hits that. You really have to make what you do an obsession. And I think that's the right way to approach it.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, I also follow UFC, and that guy is very entertaining, but he's, you know, obviously the top of the game. And, you know, since you were 5, you knew it, and you've always been constantly working at it with a unparalleled drive. And I think that's why you're where you're at today. And, you know, I apologize for the sequence of questions, because I, you know, in my mind, I'm like, this is the perfect way to end the interview.
Nah,
but
keep going, man. It's fun. I love it.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun. But I'm also curious, you know, learning from like the best, do you have like a specific morning routine, like in place, like generally, like when you're training or whatnot? Like, say when you get out of bed, do you immediately, like, I don't know, go for a run? I mean, just for example, do you have a routine?
Yeah, I've been actually working on it with Pablo. He's been trying to give me a routine, and I've been doing it. Every morning I go out for a run.
Nice.
I go out for a run before I start off, like breakfast or anything. I go for a run, and I usually, since like I'm a Roman Catholic, I usually give the cross and blow a kiss to the sky.
Nice.
And then, you know, I just run for 10 minutes, and that's how I start off my day, literally. I just run and stretch out a little bit, just reevaluate. And start off my day.
That's awesome. I mean, I think just starting the morning off with exercise for anyone is it just gets your brain going and muscles going and everything, and that's you know, that's the right way to start off. And you know, also with your devotion to, you know, yourself and everything you believe in, that's amazing. A couple equipment questions, man. Everyone loves that. What sticks are you using right now, and also what string?
I'm using the Prince, was it Warrior, what, T1000 or something? It's, it's the racket. It's the racket that John Isner uses.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just recently just switched to that, because I was always with the Babolat Aero Pro Drive.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I felt like I was kind of, because you know how the Aero Pro, it's kind of thick and
it
doesn't go through the air as quickly. So I wanted a racket that goes through the air quickly, like the K-Blade, but has the same power as the Babla. And Prince, you know, was kind of Prince's old rackets, the 03, you know, with the holes. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really like those, but I don't know. It was really random because I was running out of rackets and I was looking to try out rackets and I was like, hey, why not try out Prince? So that's the kind of stick I'm using right now. And it's great. I got the same pop as a Babolat and it goes through the air quickly like the K-Blade.
That's really cool, man. Because that's funny you mentioned that because, I mean, first off, I use the Aero Pro or the Pure Drive. I forgot the name already. But and it sometimes it feels clunky. I mean,
yeah,
you know, obviously it feels a little clunkier when you, you know, on days you lose. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, I was thinking of switching as well. So I don't know, like maybe I'll try out that Prince model. And were there any other ones that you liked, like the, from other brands like Wilson or another Babolat that you might have tried too, or no?
No, I didn't really try out any other rackets. I literally just picked out the first racket I saw and fell in love with it. I don't know. I just got lucky.
Yeah, that's, man, I'm jealous. That's yeah. Awesome. And then also, sorry, you're what's string and what tension?
I use this Prince string, but I honestly don't know if they came out with it yet. It's a 15 it's a 15 gauge. It's like experimental. Because like I've been popping strings like crazy, and I asked the guy, hey, I need strings that last, and he's like, oh, don't worry, I'll get you some of this like experimental stuff. So he gave me like this string that I don't think has even come out yet. And oh man, it's awesome. It's like it lasts. It's like a, how you say, like a RPM Babolat string, but lasts like 2 or 3 times longer. Wow. So yeah, it's perfect. And what was the other question?
Oh, what? the tension.
Oh, I string it a lot looser now. I string it at 45.
45. Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. Cause I just had a guest on episode, I think 18 of the podcast, and his name's Tim Strawn. He's a master racket technician who strung at some of the Grand Slams and stuff. And he was saying that like a lot of people really string it like a lot higher than they should, and they should experiment like even in like the 40s and things like that. So it's good to hear you kind of reinforce that definitely maybe possible and a good choice. And even for somebody with a lot of power like you, you're still stringing it in the 40s.
I actually been told, like I've been told the same thing. Like I was stringing my racket not too long ago at 55 56, and Pablo Raya and Chip Hooper, they both told me, hey, you got to string at 45, you know, that's I don't know, it's looser, you know, you get more power off the ball, you know, it's, I don't know, it's a lot better. Like it works. Let's just say it works. I don't know how, but it works.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Switching gears slightly, you know, I'm not sure if you, I mean, you probably know like the Peruvian professional players, but I'm curious, like as it stands right now, would you be like kind of in the top, one of the top players there? I mean, like who else is up there like in front of you?
Well, there's some guys, I don't know if you would know them, but I already beat the number one guy.
Nice.
At a futures. His name is Mauricio Echazu. He's an older guy. He's about like 27 or so, 26. And there's some young guys as well. They're all about in the, like, let's say in the 600s. They're pretty good guys. They're good guys. They're pretty solid. They're clay quarters, obviously, but, I just feel like I'm just better. Like I just feel like I'm better singles and doubles wise. Like I come with more firepower than they do.
Right.
Cause they play a different way down there in South America, you know, kick serves and just grind.
Yeah.
Work with angles. And I'm over here just blasting serves and coming in, you know,
yeah.
It's a completely different ball game. But, no, I feel like if I was to join the team right now, I'd be number one.
That's fantastic. And yeah, I'm sure you're going to have great success. I mean, they're going to be really surprised, facing a game like yours, as most people are. And so like, what is your favorite surface, hard court, or actually, you know, which one is it right now?
Well, ever since my game style has changed, it used to be clay, but it's hard.
Okay.
I really like the hard courts. I like the faster hard courts, and eventually I'd love to play on grass.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be pretty awesome. I'm sure you will eventually.
Yeah.
And so when you mentioned like the getting ready for like the US Open Nationals and stuff, like, are you going to play other of those sectional events, or like, how does that one work for that?
Well, that one's like the last one to play, you know, like that one's at New Haven.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I just recently started working with Chip Hooper. I mean, this guy, he's beating like, McEnroe, Borg, Becker, like he's beating all these guys.
Damn.
You know? Yeah, no, this guy's a stud. And like, he took me in with Pablo, and I just need for like the next month or so, I'm really going to be working on my specifics so that I can be ready for that. For the US Open Nationals, it's more so a preparation for me right now, and then I can play the tournaments later.
Awesome. And so internally, like, is your main goal right now to be like, did you set it to be like number one in the world, or do you have like, is your goal lower than that right now, or what are you thinking, right? You know,
as far as your goal? Well, as of like what I want to do in the future.
Let's say like in the next 5 years, where do you want to be?
Well, within the next 5 years, I want to be in the Pan American Games. Nice. Which is going to be in Peru, and then obviously eventually play the Olympics, you know, for my country, Peru, you know, and then in 5 years, we're going to be playing all the Grand Slams, being top 50.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to get there, man. So if there's one key to succeeding on the pro tour, what would you say that is? Because with all the, you know, amazing players, like, you know, already, like, that hundreds of players that are, you know, great players, like, what do you think is the key to wading, you know, those waters and coming out on the top?
Managing your anxiety, managing your negativity, whatever holds you back, whatever makes you, you know, second guess yourself, it's managing that stuff. And I feel like if you're able to manage that stuff, the sky's the limit.
Right. I mean, I love that quote. And I, you know, I think the biggest thing I'm going to take away from this interview, besides the sock exercise, which I'm going to start immediately after, is just the Conor McGregor quote you mentioned about making it an obsession. You really have to just hardwire into your brain that, you know, this is my goal, this is what I want, and I'm going to get it.
For sure.
You know? Yep. And, you know, that's why I think you're going to do huge things, as you already have been doing. And Junior, you know, I just want to, give you just huge props. I mean, you know, several things. First off, when I met you at the, US Open, sectional, qualifier tournament, you were just, nothing but class, you know, very respectable, you know, person, and you respected me. And, you know, even though you're such a great player, and, an instance, you know, for today, I was trying to arrange the interview with Junior, and he was so nice to do the interview, even though his own team, you know, Peru, they played Colombia today in the, is the Copa Americana? I forgot the name of the...
it's an American Cup. It's like the Cup of the Americas.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, they were in like the 20th minute, and then, you know, Junior is still so kind enough to, you know, do the interview. So I'm sure he's excited to find out what the result was. But, you know, Junior is just such a great player, and it's just been a pleasure seeing you grow up, Junior, from age like 7, you know, when you're just a little guy, to, you know, becoming a grown man and just, you know, crushing it and impressing all of us and making us proud. So, you know, thanks so much for giving us, you know, all the knowledge that you have and that's made you successful. And it's going to really help our audience succeed as well. So we all look forward to all your successes coming up and wish you nothing but the best.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. It's always fun to talk to one of the guys that I looked up to, you know, playing when I was growing up. I'll always have time for you, you know that. So, no, it's just great to catch up and be on your podcast. Thanks for having me on it.
Thanks, Junior. It's a huge pleasure and honor. So, you know, all the best to you, and you take care of yourself.
All right. Thanks, man.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Junior Orr. It was a real pleasure speaking with Junior and also seeing him at the U.S. Open sectional qualifier tournament a couple weeks ago. I was lucky enough to get a few games against him, and I was even luckier to have interviewed him on this podcast, because he had a lot of really amazing and helpful advice for all of us that we can implement in our games to play better tennis. I'd really appreciate it if you guys would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast, whether you subscribe on iTunes or any other podcast app that you use to listen to the show. With iTunes, you can just go to tennisfiles.com/iTunes and click on the blue View in iTunes button and then hit subscribe. And I'd also appreciate it if you guys would leave some feedback about the show as well. Review and comment is always helpful for me to get a better understanding of, you know, whether I'm doing a good job or whether, you know, this is all just terrible. but no, I appreciate any feedback. And I just would like to close the show, as I often do, with a quote. And this quote is straight from Junior Orr, our special guest for today, and originally said by Les Brown. And the quote, again, is, "Shoot for the moon, and if you miss, you will still be among the stars." So shoot high, have high goals, know that you can achieve a lot. And if you aim high, and, you know, even if you fall short, you will still perform at a very high and respectable and fantastic level. So cheers to you guys. Thanks so much for listening to this fantastic episode with Junior Orr. And I wish you all the best. Keep improving. Keep challenging yourself. And I know you're going to all enjoy the game of tennis for a lifetime. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.